afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Monday, November 28th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Well, Melody.
Well, you know, they tell us that maybe the Donald Trump effect perhaps lost its hold over the financial markets. We've seen a little pressure, but I hardly call 53 points to the downside a whole big negative impact.
Everybody's panicking, huh?
Yeah, big panic there on 53 points there. But hey, it's a sign. But you also have, it's interesting to see what might happen with the vote in Italy coming out to see if we'll talk about that in just a little bit, but we did have U.S. stocks. They slipped from its all-time high. And, there's been so many expectations for this growth under our new president.
And, yeah, but, there's a point to this. You know, most presidents, they get a honeymoon after they take office, and Congress will cooperate with them for the first 6 months or whatever. They try to get all their legislation passed almost immediately after the new president takes office. That's the honeymoon. Trump is getting a honeymoon before he's even taken office. It's really quite extraordinary. Oh, my God, you'd think he was the Messiah or something. Now, I'm in favor of Trump, and I'm not critical of the man. I'm just saying this is another evidence of how strange this election has been. It has clearly increased optimism in this country, Trump's election. And we'll talk later in the program about Hillary being involved in the recount, the vote recount, the rest, that sort of thing. But one thing about it, if Hillary won the recount right now, the market would probably fall 1,500 or 2,000 points.
Well, I don't know what it would do, but the whole point
I
is,
don't either for a but, fact, but I'm just saying the whole thing is just weird.
There might be a honeymoon and there might have been an effect, you know, for the new president. But to me, it's more of a sign of a dysfunctional market because you don't have markets react in the way that they've seen. And again, it should show anyone who follows the markets in gold and silver that these huge hedge funds, I mean, there aren't any fundamentals behind anything. No one knows what's – you just have this money flow in and flow out in various areas. Now, the next possible effect on the markets could be what happens in Italy. You know, there's been predictions that after this referendum vote on the 4th that you could have 8 banks in serious trouble. So we'll talk a little bit about that referendum that their Prime Minister Renzi is putting through and what happens, whether he loses or whether he wins. Also, you had a lot of funds. You had a fund that holds companies that could gain if the U.S. lifts trade restrictions with Cuba. That surged today also, the most since 2014 after, of course, Castro's death. So, you know, a lot of strange things going on in the market. And again, it's the volatility. It confirms the volatility. And to me, it shows just how dysfunctional these markets truly are. But we were able to have a little bit of a heyday in gold today. Gold in the New York aftermarket, New York spot was up $8.90 at $1,193. You have silver up 28 cents at $16.69. Platinum was up $10 at $926. And palladium was up 25 at $761. The USDX today, little pressure. I mean, barely, 0.23 at 101.27. Crude oil was up 0.78 at 46.84. Paper markets today, as I mentioned, the Dow was down 54 points at 19,097. The NASDAQ was down 30 at 53.68. The S&P was down 11 at 22.01. 10-year yield was down a little bit, 0.05 at 2.32%. And European markets were down, with Germany being down over 1%. So You know, not a very, you know, active day. Of course, there was a lot of things going on in the markets, but we did have Black Friday, and some of the reports coming out on Black Friday was there were more bargain hunters that opened their wallets, and but they spent a little less than in 2015. More than 154 million consumers shopped both in stores and online, which was about 3 million more than last year, and this is according to the National Retail Federation. But they did say the NRF, the National Retail Federation, that tracks the consumer visits and spending data, said that the consumers spent about $10 less on average, about $290 this year compared to $300 in 2015. Now, they talk about some really incredible deals that allowed them to spend less. My question is, was it because of their incredibly great deals, or is it because of less disposable income? I mean, when you have, of course, health insurance premiums haven't increased yet. You'll see that in January, but we certainly all know what those increases are. So, again, the question, is it disposable income that dropped, or is it because there were such great deals? But they also go on to talk about, according to the organization, about 36% of shoppers this year said all of their purchases were on sale compared to 32.5% last year. The brick and mortar stores, shoppers, you know, again, they're still having problems there. 108 million people shopped online over the weekend, about 5 million more than last year. 99 million people said they shopped in stores, which is down 3 million from last year. Let's see.
3 million down in
brick and mortar
stores?
For brick and mortar stores, that's correct.
Yeah. Well, you can see the way the world is going. I mean, it's going to, the brick and mortar stores are increasingly, they'll be a showroom for products. You can buy them there and you can go see the product and take a look at it and pick it up and feel it and the rest of that sort of thing. But increasingly, we're going to buy our products over the internet. That won't be the only, it won't become the only way to buy things, but it will become predominant.
But you know what? I'll tell you what.
I'm
sorry. You can say everybody can go online because of the ease and so forth, and you kind of have to ask yourself which really came first. Walk into a department store. I mean, they're just about as filthy and about as dirty. I mean, you know, you can't find anyone to help you. You have to look around to see, you know, who's checking people out. Plus, you have one person checking out 100 people. You have one person that's just doing it. Like, who wants to go to these stores? The selections, you know, are they asking? Do they? It's like they don't want the people to come to their stores.
Well, they're squeezed. And in order to try to hang on, they're
squeezed?
Cut back on labor, which means there's less people to clean.
Let's go back 15, 20 years ago. I mean, they had the opportunity. They had the opportunity to, you know, keep their stores nice, to keep employees in there so they could actually help people. And they didn't do it. So, hey, they didn't keep their clientele. So they lost it to online. So, you know, management. It's like, how hard can it be? I mean, go to these strip
malls. It depends on how much help you've got.
Plus, it was overbuilt. Look at all these strip malls that were built. You know, I mean, so, yeah, I mean, you don't have the same number of people shopping either that you had in order to support all of these strip malls and so forth. So yeah. I think there's a lot of reasons, you know, why people have gravitated toward online. Is it just because of the online buying? I don't think so. I think there was a lot of other reasons that...
There's other reasons, but at bottom, you're talking price. Every time, if I'm going to buy something on the internet, I don't have to spend. I know it costs money to fire up a car, drive down the road, and it's not. If you understand what's happening, you know that's not a free ride. It costs money to go to town. It costs money to go to the store. Why not just sit home and plug in the computer and buy something, and it'll be there in a couple of days. Save the gas and oil. I mean, you look at it, and it's money, money, money. That's the primary.
The American people aren't about saving, Al. You know, but who wants to go to some place that's tacky? I don't.
Well, it depends on how much you can save there. All right, I mean, if the place is tacky, I don't have an objection to walking in. All right, to a place that's tacky. I was in a place that was tacky.
I think the sales online are the same as the same sales that you find in stores.
I don't agree with that entirely.
It's just that you have the ability to find the store that has the cheapest.
That's the thing.
But the cheapest is not always the best. I mean, you can read reviews. I mean, read some of these reviews. Oh, well, this was the cheapest place that I found and blah, blah, blah. But yet, oh, man, I had this problem. I couldn't return it. I couldn't talk to anybody. This. That won't change, folks. That doesn't change, Al. You know, sir, if you find the cheapest price, service, something gets compromised.
Yeah, and sometimes it's the corporation goes out of business. But I saw an ad just yesterday for travel agency. Something like a travel agency. But it's pointed out that if you're going to take a trip, the average person going to take a trip, they consult something like 7 or 10 different digital travel agencies to find the best deal on the ship or on hotels or whatever. This is a program that automatically and continuously gives you a live feed on who's got the best prices from 140 different sources. It's not just you looking, okay, I'm going to look at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. No, this program will sort through 140 different sources. That is brutal competition. I mean, that's going to put some people out of business. And if you want to succeed, so long as programs like that are around, you've got to have the lowest prices. And other than that, you can tell people, oh, we've got the cleanest facilities, we've got this, that, and the other. But I'm not sure that people necessarily believe that.
I think
we can believe the price. The price you can believe, but when they say, oh, you know, it's the most beautiful beach in, Southern California or Tahiti, or, well, maybe it is and maybe it's not. But what's the price? We know what the price is. And this is the problem with the internet. When I talked to Corbett last week, James Corbett pointed out, I strongly suspect that the internet is the driving force, at least one of the driving forces, behind the deflation, falling prices, global recession that we've seen in the last couple of years. Because the internet is so competitive. Everything's down to the last dime. If somebody's selling things, you can find somebody who's selling a product, a $2,000 product that they're selling for $10 cheaper than some other guy. You'll take the $10, you'll save the $10.
I don't think
that constant pressure to hold prices down and push them down lower and lower and lower, that's contributing to deflation. It's contributing to economic recession and depression. It's certainly contributing to lower profit margins.
I think less funds contribute to recessions and the inability of people to buy. You know, if they're getting something if this the American people and people in general, if they have $100 to spend, they're going to spend it, whether it be $50 because they get a $50 savings at ABC luxury cruise palace. They'll have another $50 to spend someplace else to eat. You know, I mean, if they have $100 to spend, they're going to spend $100. Doesn't matter where they spend it or how they spend it. If there's pressure in a recession, it's because they don't have that $100 anymore.
Well, I agree, but $100. That's the reason why they're shopping on the internet. They're looking for the best deal they can get with the little money they have.
But the lower prices that they can get, I don't think would have that type of an impact.
They have impact on the department store that can't afford to keep people in working there to keep things clean and properly stocked.
Poor management.
It has impact on the
manufacturers. Just like GM. Why did GM go out of business? Yeah, there's a lot of competitions and so forth overseas. That's poor management. I mean, they were doing things that kind of like, well, why would they do that? It's almost like, gee, they want to go out of business. You know, they want to lose money. Go figure, but I mean, it's just bizarre because we live in a world where there isn't anything that's logical. There isn't anything that makes sense. Because how hard is it? I mean, you have these people who are supposed to be, you know, fairly educated to run a corporation, and yet they fail. They make decisions like it was quite obviously that it would not be successful. So anyway,
they make decisions based on a fundamental assumption in the way I look at it, and that is,
it's called shareholders.
You can use fiat dollars, debt-based monetary instruments, as if they are assets and real money.
Well, I think if anyone
who looks around, you see, if the world looks to you like it's getting crazier and crazier, in my opinion, it goes to that fundamental idea that we can use these worthless pieces of paper as if they were money. It is a flaw in logic, but if you accept that premise and you build on it, it will lead you to some conclusions that are just as irrational as negative interest rates. If you want to lend money to me, you have to pay me money to lend me money. The whole thing is crazy. It's insane. But it's a logical consequence of using a debt-based currency instead of an asset-based currency. And I think it skews the whole world into a system where people, I think it's part of the reason why the Federal Reserve has been so unsuccessful in re-stimulating the economy. I think the world does, they're using tools that might be appropriate for an asset-based monetary system. And I don't think they work with a debt-based monetary system, at least not in the same way. They may work to some extent, but not to the same extent that would be true with an asset-based monetary system. This thing's going down sooner or later, and when it does, there is going to be...
You can't fix it based on...
No, you can't fix it. It's like putting water in the fuel tank of your car.
You can't go back in time and use the things that perhaps worked 40 years ago, make it work today.
Well, you can do a dance, and you can make people think it'll work for a while, and you may be able to fool them, but reality keeps on just weighing on the whole economy and on the body politic, and, you know, sooner or later you have to succumb to that weight. It's going to take it all down, and there's not an easy way out of it because, you know, as we've said 100 times on this program, one man's asset is another man's debt, and vice versa. You can't cancel a debt without also destroying the paper assets. What happens if they cancel the $20 trillion national debt? And the answer is $20 trillion worth of bonds are going to be worthless.
And gold would be 10,000.
Oh, yeah, I know. I know. They're caught in a trap. We'll take a break. We've got some commercials. Melody, I'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk, and this is Financial Survival. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom, co-host. What's next, Melody?
Well, there's an analyst at Citigroup that says the Italian referendum is going to be the next big political event. And what we've seen as a move into bonds and even gold today is leading up to this Italian referendum that happens on December 4th. And again, there's some other things that are going on in addition to, you have Austria, they're holding elections. So there's a lot of things going on that's coming up in these various countries where, you know, people are a little upset. You're going to see them go by the vote by the way of Brexit. They're going to vote by way of what they saw here in the United States. And so you have France's elections that's coming up in May with the National Front. We'll probably get another test in the election and with Marine Le Pen. And so there's a lot of political upsets on the horizon. And the next one is the Italian referendum. And it's a constitutional referendum that'll be held in Italy. And the voters will be asked whether they approve of amending the Italian constitution to reform the appointment and powers of the Parliament of Italy, as well as the partition of powers of state, regions, administrative, and entities. And you ask, what's that got to do with the markets and so forth? And it'll, if it gets voted down, you have the Prime Minister that said that he will resign, and which you can get various, you know, they can call for elections, and this is where you're going to have a lot of turmoil within the markets because Italy is in pretty bad shape in their banking system. But this, what's interesting is, you know, the Italian Republic, there were only two other referendums in their history back in 2001 and 2006. One was approved, one was rejected. So it's kind of interesting, and this is something that we don't follow. In this country, we can barely, people don't even know our own history and what's going on in our own country. And when I visited Europe, that was one thing that just amazed me, was how much they knew about our country. They know more about our country than the people in this country know about our country. So it kind of fascinates me. And to see, and unfortunately, as globalized as we are, as our markets are so interconnected, you know, you can have things change in one country over there and certainly affect ours. So Renzi is going after these changes. He says it reduced the instability that has given Italy 63 governments since the end of World War II. And mainly, there's so much. The one item that I saw that was particularly interesting was by this referendum would be they wouldn't need as much approval if going to war. And I thought that was very interesting, that it wouldn't have to go through all their parliaments, their senates, and so forth. It would take less government approval to go to war. So if he loses the vote, he says he would step down. So they would have early elections, possibly in 2017, and the party that is most likely to follow in his footsteps, so to speak, would be the Five Star, which is virtually tied to his party and polls. And they are kind of like Al, you've heard of Beppe Grillo?
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah.
Couldn't think of his name, but yep, he's Five Star.
Yeah, he's the Five Star.
And he's highly critical. All right? He's not a fan of government. He's critical of government, as I understand it. And he's likely to make some serious changes. I think the other point is when you're talking about there are a number of political votes, elections, referendums that are coming up. We're talking about in Europe.
Yes.
Yeah. And again, given my fixation on fiat currency, I'm going to make you a bet that part of the reason we're going to see this political change and perhaps revolution and instability, I think, goes to using the euro in the first place.
That's what Grippi wants. He wants to pull them out of the EU.
They're all going to do this before it's done. That currency is going to fail. When? I don't know when it's going to happen, but it's not going to be 20 years from now. It's not going to make it for 20 years or 10 years. I assume it's going to make it for another couple of years. I don't know for a fact, but it's going to fail. And from my perspective, you've got people in these, I don't know, 20 different countries that are tied to the Eurozone. I don't know what the exact number is. But some of those people are going to be smart enough to realize they're having trouble with the euro. And they're going to realize, they're going to sense, I suspect, that the euro lies at the heart of their problem, and they're going to want to bail out. Like England did. Of course, England never adopted the euro per se, but it bailed out of it. We had the Brexit just in the last couple of months where it bailed out of its association with the European Union, or it voted to bail out. It hasn't done it yet. But this goes to the currency, and given that you have a number of nations, this is not like the difference between Ohio and Indiana. When we start talking about Europe, there are embedded cultural language differences and whatever, and it might be nice if we could all get together and sing Kumbaya, but the truth of the matter is the French don't want to sing Kumbaya, at least not in the same key as the Germans. And there are natural, tensions, antagonisms that have been there for centuries, and they're not likely to go away. And that means somebody's going to say, we're going to start our own currency again.
Well, I think one of the things that really did this in was opening the borders. And you have all this mass immigration. Mm-hmm. And, the five star is against all the immigration. I don't know if it could have worked or if it had any possibility, if it was a system that was designed to fail, if it was a test, if it was whatever it was.
Well, it's failing around the world.
But it is failing.
Yep. It is perceived as
that,
a problem.
But that open immigration is really what's killing. I mean,
not exactly. People would be happy to have open immigration if they were making money. But when they're going broke and they can't find a job, they're going to blame the immigrant for taking their jobs.
No, it's waking up people to what their governments are doing to them. They are putting a stop to it. And for whatever reasons, whether it be jobs, whether it be what, I don't think immigration in Europe today is the same as our immigration here.
But I think the public reaction is much the same, and it will be a function of whether the economy is doing well or poorly. If the economy is doing poorly, the people that are unemployed are looking for somebody to blame, and the immigrants are the natural target.
Germany was going along fine until Merkel opened up and brought in Syrians. So that didn't have anything to do with jobs at that point in time. So
I get that, but nevertheless, I'm just saying that if everybody was getting rich, economy was strong, everybody was getting ahead, they wouldn't mind the immigrants particularly. I think they would live to regret allowing the immigrants to come in. I'm against just open immigration and this insanity of no borders, for God's sake. What a dumb idea that is. No borders means that every poor incompetent on the face of the earth is going to be drawn to wherever apparently people are getting rich. We have the stupid idea that if they go there, they'll get rich too. You're not going to get rich unless you can embrace and take advantage of whatever culture is succeeding. And the way you protect your success is you maintain your borders. If you've had success, you got a good nation running, maintain your borders. It doesn't just mean that you've got coal in the ground and iron ore someplace that you can translate into skyscrapers or whatever. It means that you have a system of values where people somehow manage to work together in a way that's prosperous for everyone. If you've got that kind of culture, you better be wary about bringing people in with another culture and say, oh, they're all the same. We're all just singing Kumbaya. Bunk. If you want to get ahead, you need a system of values that will allow it. And a lot of people come from cultures that are completely incompetent to generate prosperity. That's part of the reason they want to come to countries like Europe and the United States. They think they just walk in. You know, the Mexicans come down. I have nothing against the Mexicans per se, but they want to come into this country and say, well, we'll just, now that we're here, we'll get rich too. Not until you adopt the system of values that was conducive to getting rich in this country in the first place. If you want to come here and be a Mexican, you want to come into this country and still be a Mexican and maintain the values you had in Mexico, you're going to live in the same kind of poverty you had in Mexico. It's not about resources. I know resources are important, but it's about values. You got to protect your culture if you have a culture that is worth protecting. And that means you got to have strong borders. And that means you tightly regulate the flow of immigrants coming into the country. They have to be productive. The people are coming to this country just to get welfare.
And, you know, and we've seen in Ohio State today, where there was another situation, a Somali refugee hospitalized at least 9 people, ran a car into him, stabs him, and complained about lack of Muslim prayer rooms. So we'll have
this is one of the craziest things you can possibly do is bring Muslims into this country. They will never, if they're sincere in their faith, they will never assimilate. They can't. Well, they won't. It isn't going to happen. It's going to be nothing but trouble, and people are going to live to regret this before it's over, and it's going to be obvious to everyone. It may take a few more years before it's obvious, but they're working on it.
And I was speaking to someone this weekend where they were just over the holiday weekend where they thought, well, there's no reasons why they can't, you know, they can assimilate into this country. It's like, no, their religion does not allow them to.
I know.
And they can't get, well, they can practice their religion in their own little faith. No, it's bigger than that.
Yeah, they don't come here just so they can, for religious freedom from them.
No.
They don't want religious freedom for anyone. And you'll see signs sometimes where they say, freedom, go to hell. All right? They don't want freedom. They want people to be compelled to be Muslims. They're not just here to say, you know, this country started out with religious freedom. We had the pilgrims coming over here from England to escape persecution in England, and they came here so they could practice their faith. They did not come here to force the Indians to become pilgrims. All right? I know that there was efforts to colonize the Indians and whatever. I understand that. But it wasn't the same thing. It wasn't a matter, well, let's force these Indians, you know, to become Christians. It wasn't that there was some persuasion involved, but the force was not there. Muslims don't believe in religious freedom. They don't come here to exercise freedom. They come here to destroy freedom. They want to make you a Muslim. And it's not a casual thing, so far as at least if you can believe what you see in the media. They are coming here as not just evangelists, not even looking for freedom for themselves. They're coming here to conquer and to compel. And if you don't join their group, they'll chop your head off. You can't have the Muslim faith, which defies the idea of religious freedom. It takes advantage of it in this country, but they actually defy it. They say, you're not going to be free. You can't be a Christian or a Jew or whatever. You're either a Muslim or you're dead.
I'm sure there are some reformers, some that are over, that really don't follow the true, that, you know, they've kind of like the Amish and the Mennonites and so forth. But yeah. But no, that's...
You're asking for trouble with it.
Yes.
You're asking for trouble. It's not going to work out, and we're not all going to sing Kumbaya. And when that insight is finally apparent to most people in this country, it may be too late to do anything about it other than resort to violence. And I'm not advocating it, but I'm just saying, you keep fooling around, watch and see what happens. You know, somewhere along the line, you have to stop living in a dream world and stop electing politicians or following politicians who say, oh, we're all going to sing Kumbaya and we're all going to live together. No, we're not. You know, when what's-his-name, I can't remember, black guy who got beat up back in California, Rodney King, he said, why can't we all get together? Why can't we all, you know, just get along? Well, the answer is just 'cause. All right? Why can't you get along with your previous spouse? Why can't they get along with you? Listen, there is something that goes on in human nature, and we are inclined to get into fights. It's unfortunate, it's sad, but it's the way we're built. And if you bring people in that are likely to inspire those fights, you have to expect you're going to, okay, fine, bring them on down. We'll just turn this whole country into a mixed martial arts arena, and we can duke it out in the streets or wherever. In my opinion, you need to respect your own values if they've been working properly. And if they haven't, all right, you got people coming from foreign countries that want to emigrate in here illegally. I don't have any respect for them. If they had any real courage, if they were worth a darn, in my opinion, they would fight for freedom in their own country. They don't want to fight. And I know, and I don't blame them for that. You know, who wants to get into a civil war? Nobody. Nobody in their right mind wants to get into that kind of fighting. But just the same, that's the way you lay the foundation for something worthwhile. If you want it, you got to fight for it in your own country. If you don't have the courage to do it in your own country, then I'm not sure that we need you over here. We got enough cowards in this country who refuse to fight for freedom, who were born here. We don't need more coming up who are also afraid to fight for courage. If you don't fight for freedom in your own country, I don't expect you to stand up for freedom in this country. So the whole thing is, it's unpleasant. The ideas are unpleasant, but nevertheless, they appear to be true. And if you want to keep what you got, you're going to have to embrace some unpleasant opinions. And if you want to say, oh, we can all play nice, I guarantee you, you're going to be inviting people into your neighborhood, into your home, into your nation, who don't know how to play nice and don't intend to play nice, and they're going to take everything you will give them, and then what you don't want to give them, they'll take that too. So, I don't know. Coming into difficult times, and partly because the economy is in a sad state, and why is the economy? In large measure, because we have a government that believes in central planning. A government is running this whole country like a giant corporation. And they're going to be the masterminds, and they're going to control. How are they doing a good job? And the answer is no. They've almost destroyed this country. It's one of the fundamental problems. It puts us all ultimately in a bad mood, and we don't want to put up with any more crapola, and therefore, who knows? Wind up embracing some unpleasant opinions. All right, it's time to take a break. Melody and I will be back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231. And the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. Got an article from CNBC, and the headline is China's Central Bank Deputy Governor Talks Up Yuan Strength. All right, he's talking about the strength of the Chinese currency. And the reason I bring this to your attention is I have written a couple of articles and talked about this on the radio program a couple of times, that there is a teeter-totter relationship between the dollar as world reserve currency on one end of the teeter-totter, and basically the balance of the currencies, fiat currencies, including the euro and the pound and whatever, that are on the other end of the teeter-totter. And this article tends to support that contention. Governor Yi Yang, who is the governor of the People's Bank of China, our deputy governor, he said, comparing the yuan's recent moves against the dollar misses the currency's underlying strength against a more appropriate watched and a more appropriately watched basket. And what he's saying is that people are saying, oh my gosh, the yuan is losing value compared to the dollar. Dollar's going up, yuan's going down. And the guy in China at the central bank, he says, oh, don't pay attention to our relationship to the dollar. Look at how we relate to the euro and to the English pound and to other currencies. And he say, look at the basket of other currencies. And what I'm saying, yeah, that basket is on the one end of the teeter-totter. And the dollar is on the other end because it is the world reserve currency. When we talk about when the dollar goes up and the yuan goes down, people are complaining, say, oh, the yuan's going down. The governor of this People's Bank of China, he's their deputy governor. He said, no, compare it to the other currencies. And he's right, because the other currencies are on the same end of the teeter-totter as that Chinese yuan. They're all going down together at the same time while the dollar is going up. And the gold price of gold is going down for the moment. All right? But point I'm trying to illustrate, and maybe doing it in a clumsy way, but I'm just saying, look, that teeter-totter analogy is valid. And the man's description of, don't worry about the Chinese yuan going down, inflating in relation to the dollar, compare it to other currencies. Yeah. They're all at the same end of the teeter-totter. They're all going down when the dollar is going up. And it should be good for their economies insofar as everybody seems to think that inflation will stimulate their economies. When their end of the teeter-totter is going down due to inflation and their currency is becoming worth less, the dollar is going up. It's devalued. It's deflated, becoming more valuable. A lot of people would suppose a stronger currency, stronger dollar, is a great idea. In this brave new world, it's not. All right? And the other end, they're not going to do any better. They're going to have inflation while we have deflation, and their inflation will destroy their currencies. Gone to the end of inflation is the currency's destruction. The end of deflation is the destruction of debtors, of which our government is the biggest in the world. We are caught again in this fiat currency. We're caught in a way that we're not going to get out of this. We have played the fool. We have allowed ourselves to think that a piece of paper can be treated as money, and that we will somehow be responsible and wise and generous and whatever. That isn't true. It might appear that way. You might you may be able to maintain that illusion for a couple of decades, a couple of generations. Stuff doesn't, the truth of these matters, these are too big. They're not like the truth that intrudes on my life on a daily basis. And I look at a particular truth and I react to it right now. The truth, when we talk about money, it can take several generations for the truth. You've got a bogus monetary system. You may not see that. It may even be seem like a great system for a couple of generations. But sooner or later, the truth comes out, and when it does, everything goes down. Everything collapses. Everything implodes. People succumb to a greater depression. And then you begin to regain your values. You begin to say, wait a second, it's time to stop playing the fool. Let's find out what real values are and run this country on a basis where people in positions of power in Congress, the Senate, the White House, they cannot manipulate the monetary system. And how do you do that? You need gold and silver. Why? Because they can't spin it out of thin air. You have a gold and silver based currency? Fine. It forces government to stop singing kumbaya and deal with the truth of the matter, which are often hard, but nevertheless, they are the truths that keep the nation prosperous. They force them to embrace real values. Right? And instead of engaging in crazy ideas like negative interest rates, force them. How? Make them use gold and silver, which to this day is mandated by Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1 of the Constitution of the United States, which says no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts. Right? Mandated. Founders knew what they were doing. We had a bunch of idiots who took over the government of this country, and they said, no, we can get by without gold and silver. No, we can't. So anyway, that the article from Chinese, he's saying don't pay attention to the Chinese yuan's relationship to just the dollar. Pay attention to the Chinese yuan's relationship to the other fiat currencies. And I'm saying all that does is illustrate that we do have a teeter-totter relationship. World reserve currency on one end, the rest of the fiat currencies on the other end. That argument is a little bit compromised because there's a couple other currencies that function as a world reserve currency, but the dollar is still the primary world reserve currency, and that means we got a teeter-totter, and it's going to stay that way until we walk away from world reserve currency. Well, we give world reserve currency too, Melody.
I think one of the important things that he said here is also he talks about how given that economic structure, cycles, and interest rate policies differed in various countries, fixating on a single currency was not suitable. Meaning, and they have said this before, they don't like the U.S. dollar being the world reserve currency. You know, and I believe, again, we go back to the point, and you can have a declining dollar or a declining currency that might be beneficial for a while. But however, if you have it fall out of bed, that's what's happening to a lot of these other currencies. Even if they decide to, even if the central banks decide to move their currencies and freely float them, if it drops too much, I mean, that's not healthy either. You know, so it's more detrimental to their economies than, you know, if it was a controlled, and that's what they've been doing. They've been controlling their ability to lower their currencies to help their trade and so forth. But I think, again, his part here where he says a single currency was not suitable, fixating on a single currency, meaning the U.S. dollar and its strength, having a world reserve currency, they said it before. Currencies should be a little more balanced, and the only way they're going to get that balance is through gold. They need something to stabilize the currencies within the baskets.
It isn't just the currencies. It's the morons who run the who are the central planners.
Well, they're still going to be, aren't they still going to be there still?
They're going to be there, but if they have to deal with gold and silver, they can't play the idiot.
All right? They will be forced.
Gold and silver imposes
a
discipline.
Yeah, but they will be forced. Exactly. They were going to be forced.
It imposes a discipline. It's like having your daddy there who's saying, you can't use the car unless you get it home by midnight, and there better not be one cigarette butt in the ashtray and full tank of gas and so on. You got dad. If you want to use the car, you got to play by the rules. When you don't have gold and silver, the people in positions of power don't have to play by the rules. They can manipulate for their own advantage, and in the end, it works out badly for the rest of the country.
And that's what China's saying. They don't want that reserve currency. So the only way they're going to fix it is by having some sort of gold in a basket.
That's right.
Currencies to stabilize it was my point.
Objective reality, not something where, you know, I mean, what is an English pound worth? Well, it's worth X number of euros, which are worth X number of yuan, which are worth X number of yen, which are worth X number of dollars, which are worth X number of pounds. What are they worth? What is any of it worth? It's all relative. There's not an objective value on this thing. And that opens the door. It's like doing that three-card Monte or the which one of the walnuts is the pea under, and it's not under any of them. We can use a pretend pea, see? And then nobody ever guesses right. They can run the system without actually having to use a... And they always win. The dealer always wins because there's no real pea under the walnut shell. This is the same thing with this monetary system. It's just taken us a couple of generations to figure it out. But we're getting closer and closer to that knowledge. Melody, did you have a special you wanted to talk about?
I did. It's a little complicated. It's a bigger special than usual, although it's not that much more expensive. The package is costing $1,700. But you get a lot in this little package that I have here, $1,700. One of the items is one of the smallest coins in U.S. history. It's the Type 1 gold dollar coin. And it's a giant, though, in terms of history, rarity, and value. And it's interesting how the groundwork was laid and the fascination for this coin, both in the Carolinas and Georgia, where the nation's first big gold rush took place early in the 1800s. The rush had a major impact on the United States coinage, and it led to the establishment of two branch mints in this region, both in North Carolina and Georgia. But the first gold dollar that was made in the United States was privately minted, Al, and produced by a German immigrant in 1830. And he used to operate a jewelry shop. Mm-hmm. And finding that gold dust and nuggets were the primary medium of exchange in the area during this gold rush. So he ran a series of ads in the North Carolina Spectator, offered to refine raw gold into coins for a nominal fee. And by 1840... him and his family had turned out more than $2.2 million worth of gold coins, of which half were gold dollars. So this special does include a gold dollar. I think the dates on them are 1851. I have 1852s. The first year that they were minted were in 1849, when the second gold rush happened in California. The government was forced to begin minting their own gold pieces along with $20 gold pieces. So on March 3rd, 1849, Congress passed legislation authorizing not only the gold dollars, but also the double eagles, the $20 gold piece. So thus did the nation's smallest and largest regular issue gold coins emerge at that point in time from that California gold rush. So the special includes a $1 gold piece, again, dated, and these are almost uncirculated. The largest, a $20 Liberty gold piece, this will also be in an almost uncirculated condition. So you have a dollar gold piece, a $20 gold piece. We're also going to give you an older silver dollar, a brilliant uncirculated peace dollar, along with a modern issue silver eagle. And with that silver eagle, you'll also receive the special Merry Christmas packaging for the silver eagle only. So basically, you're getting four coins. You're getting the smallest of the gold coins, a Type 1 gold dollar, and the largest of the gold coins, a $20 Liberty gold piece, both in AU condition, along with two silver coins. A silver eagle, a modern issue, that is the Merry Christmas packaging for the silver eagle only, and a brilliant uncirculated peace dollar. This includes all your shipping costs. It also includes your insurance costs, and is a nice little package for $1,700. At regular cost, it would be closer to $1,800. So there's about about $100 savings on this special. So give us a call, 1-800-375-4188. We're going to run this. I'm going to try to run it through the month of the end of November and into December until I run out of coins. I never run out of coins.
But you run out of specials sometimes.
We do run out of specials sometimes. Yes. So we will try. We'll try to extend this to the folks as long as possible, and we'll probably post it with a newsletter that comes out next week. So 1-800-375-4188, $1,700. It is a great little package and something unusual. Something that's very interesting, something that has a nice little history to it, something that has great value. And that's one thing about coins, a coin that's, 250 years old, basically.
Well, it sounds like a nice little history lesson for an interesting gift for a child, youngster, in high school or whatever. Here's a little American history for you. 1-800-375-4188. Melody and I are out of time for today. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.